Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back, and it is now or never. And today is going to be kind of interesting. I'm going to use a religious term, and I'm going to apply it towards our political system. In other words, I am going to perform a political exorcism. It is time everyone in America recognizes that the Constitution has nothing to do with politics. And so when you want to bring in things that have nothing to do with the Constitution, you are an evil spirit. And we need to exorcise all evil spirits that are keeping us from uniting on the entire Constitution. Now, I know the first thing I'm going to tell you right now, there are plenty of people that are naysayers. You are going to say, no, I don't accept that. I am here to tell you, folks, that we can restore, we can completely reclaim the Republic with all of our amendments. All of our amendments really aren't what's keeping us from actually restoring or reclaiming the Republic. You want to know what's keeping us from reclaiming the Republic? You. And all of these little pipers out there that are calling the tune because they have a little pocket of money or they have some, you know, some appealing, pithy comments that they can, you know, lure you in to say, oh, yeah, this guy, with all due respect, it doesn't mean Rush was a bad guy. But Rush, being the number one entertainer, he happened to be the number one obfuscator. He would happen to be amongst the conservatives. He never had the plan. I mean, one of the things I'll say about Martin Luther, and I'll say this about Sir Isaac Newton, because Sir Isaac Newton took a huge whack at Christianity in the world. In Sir Isaac Newton's book, and this is the revelations of Daniel and John the Revelator. It's a very interesting book, but he actually says that, you know, he is, according to him, the gospel of angelic ministry had not been restored to the earth. Go read this yourself, because basically Sir Isaac Newton actually wrote a book that was heretical to the French church, and he was a priesthood holder of the church. Most people look at Sir Isaac Newton as a scientist. No, he was actually working for the church. He was a holy man. And actually, Thomas Jefferson had a high revere for him. And so, because he looked at this man that actually was willing to challenge the status quo and the norm of what had been established under these monarchical theocracies. When you look at throughout Europe, it was a monarchical theocracy. They all had their own, you know, as they started moving away from the Catholic Church, they all put their own spin on what doctrines they were going to follow. And those spins created such conflicts and wars amongst each other that the framers were very, very well aware of the fact that you cannot create a religious theocracy. That would be the biggest mistake in America. And we're allowing an entity or an organ, a group of people that are nothing but zealots for a theocracy, the Mohammedans. They want a theocracy. And it ain't Christian. And anyway, so it's really important. Today's show, I think, is one of those shows that everybody will actually start sharing this one particular show, because I'm going to exorcise all of the lies that we're being told regarding some of these amendments. Now, let me first kind of wrap up here, because we just wrapped up on the Constitutional Convention. Now, I have not put those notes up yet. That's because the last few days, I still have not formatted yet. Now, When you look at this document, if you actually look at this in the navigation pane, you'll actually find, and that's how you can find the highlights of the places that I highlighted of what we read. And I'm doing that because I think it's important that if you have the time, go through, because I'm not the world's greatest reader. As a matter of fact, I suck because I have too active of a mind. I mean, it's one thing to orate, but it's another thing to actually say other people's words. And I'm okay with quoting and citing for a long period of time, but when I'm doing a long-term reading, my mind is my worst enemy because I start thinking of other things. I distract myself. So I know that I'm not a great reader out loud. And so it is a shortcoming. I wish I was perfect. And so I, you know, when we do, you know, scripture reading and so forth with, you know, those sisters and brothers of the gospel, you know, I struggle, but I still take my turn because everybody needs to do it. But the point is that we've read the words for you so that you can read and hear or read along as you hear what we're saying. You can see why we struggled over that word or what have you. And, you know, then you realize that the words we're giving you are not mine or Paul's or anybody else that reads on this show. The words we're giving you are those actual men, James Madison, Thomas Jefferson, and so forth. And they're speaking to you from the dust. Now go look at, I think it may be in either Ezekiel or in Isaiah, where they talk about in the last days, we will be spoken to through the dust. And in context, I believe that the scriptures is one of those things. And I truly believe for those of us in America who were blessed with his divine inspiration in designing this Constitution. This is why I tell you, there is nothing, there is not one amendment that we have to actually undo. But I'm going to tell you, as I said last Friday, because we're going to continue what I was saying last Friday. I told you I'd be back, right? I told you I would cover the 14th Amendment and those other amendments. Actually, I didn't say those other amendments. I'm going to go ahead and do that because if we're going to actually have an effective attack, we have to understand how the Constitution and what you call a bad amendment is actually the strongest tool we have added to the Constitution. The beauty of the original Constitution, Articles 1 through 7, the beauty of that document really comes forward with the 14th Amendment. And why is it that everybody is picking on it that has, and not one person that picks on it actually can cite the language of the congressional debates of what how those men actually defined it. I get so many people giving me information, and so I'm going to give you two. I don't want to spend all day on going after all the naysayers that are absolutely doing the dark work. They don't even know it. I think many of these men, and I think because they are theocratics, in other words, I think they're trying to create theocracies instead of giving all mankind the ability to choose for themselves the truths and what path to follow. I think there's plenty of people out there on the conservative side that are zealots just as well. They want their theocracy, but we'll get into that. Again, I wrapped up the Constitutional Convention yesterday. And we wrapped it up on the representation. In other words, the very last day, the day they were signing that Constitution, the discussion and the final change to it. So they actually went out and they made a final change the day they signed it. And that change was this concept of representation instead of 40,000 people being represented by one man. They felt that that was too many. They said it is far better for a person to be represented in Congress by 30,000 people. And I'm here to tell you they're right. If we can actually have a better number than that, like 20 or something like that, the bottom line is, being a politician in a self-governing system is not to be a, it is not a road to, you know, high success, at least at the federal level. I think at the state level, you know, if you really want to pay for that kind of government, then it's going to cost you. In other words, if you want political engineers to design a society for you, as long as it's congruent with the Constitution, that's their biggest problem. And that's one of the reasons why they're picking on the 14th Amendment, because the 14th Amendment keeps the states from actually passing laws, making or enforcing laws that abridge your privileges and immunities. You see these signs outside medical institutions that say no guns allowed? Ask yourself this question. How, if the 14th Amendment says no state can make or enforce any law that abridges the privileges and immunities of a U.S. citizen, and you have the right to bear arms, then how is that law going into it? And let's, the reason why they're doing this, this is all a part of this perversion by creating mercenary enforcement. You know, if you actually had the militia in your state enforcing the law instead of these mercenary forces, in other words, everybody had a responsibility to do it, and it wasn't your full-time job. That's not what put bread on your table. That's not what puts a roof over your head. You're actually going out and getting a job, a real job, to create a retirement and a path forward for you and your posterity. Your responsibility to your community and government is entwined with the fact that you live here. They created a system that did not allow for professional politicians. They limited, it was a limited government. So, you know, I know that a lot of things have happened, and we've gone down this path of, you know, having really dark and evil businesses and people and so forth. And I'm telling you, the only reason that we have all of the problems is because of the collusion between evil businesses and corporations and government. They've been working together for years and years and years. The Antitrust Act, the Sherman Act back in the 1800s, that benefited businesses. The Sarbanes-Oxley Act of 2000-something, that benefited businesses. Every time government has created unconstitutional regulations and laws, they have taken away our rights. So let me get on with this political exorcism to set the record straight. Now, as I was saying last week, we had to have a strategy. A best offense or a best defense is a good offense. And so moving into this strategy, I need to emphasize how we the people, as I've said before, we the people are being undermined, and this is how we're not doing our job. And we're being undermined because of our illiteracy and our willingness to accept these shiny nuggets that somebody pulls out of their pocket and says, hey, that 14th Amendment's evil because of this, 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 and this. And they have no source references to going into the Congressional Globe and say, see, this is exactly what that meant. No, they've actually twisted it and redefined it without actually citing Senator Howard or those men who were the designers and those who kind of pounded and framed all five sections of the 14th Amendment. And I'm here to tell you, folks, that these people out here that are doing this, that think, that's just because they've heard this false doctrine, and they've embraced it because it makes them feel good. The only reason we're being divided is because we're doing it because it makes us feel good. Oh, well, we can finally have the theocracy that I align with. Are you kidding me? Anyway, the way the dark side is baiting us, again, is they're using our strong desires. I want to help you understand this. Your desire to take your life's paradigms, your family's paradigms, because, you know, everybody, usually most, I mean, there's always turmoil in every family, but most families have a way of doing things, and they go, you know, we're so good at this, how come society can't do this? And so these strong innate desires to share the goodness of your family with others and what you believe is the better way of going and governing and so forth, that right there is an innate problem that we all have. We want to inflict our views upon others. This is why every time somebody converts to something, and I'm not speaking even religiously, you know, from VHS to Beta, everybody chose their sides. And who was right? And to actually answer that scientifically and logically, you had to actually open up the facts and dive into the facts. And nobody does that when it comes to the Constitution. Bottom line, religious desires that people are immersed into is what they want to immerse into our government. Now, this is not an outlier in society. In other words, we're not unique. And I'm going to show you or tell you, go read, what's his name? Something Roberts. John A. Roberts or something like that. Actually, if you want to know, just send me an email. It's A History of the World. And he wrote, and as a matter of fact, after the break, when we come back, I'll give you the guy's actual name. But you can look this up. He actually attests to and talks about, you know, some things like the Egyptian archiving of history in a very objective way. When the Egyptians looked at other societies' history, they weren't trying to spin an agenda because they already had control. What they tried to do was, and in some ways, I think that they were looking at these paradigms of the Mesopotamian race or, you know, those previous societies and how they just kind of laughed at them because they figured it all out because the Pharaoh's God, right? And so they didn't need to, you know, challenge what they were looking at. They wanted to document, and they did. And he reports this, and he goes through some of their findings that even he misses. But I don't want to delve on that. If we go through his book, and this is a long read, but it is worth it if you want to see a quasi, because this is an older man that, you know, Roberts was of a different age. He was a revisionist of history because he used his own slants of how he saw things. But one of the things he reported was a conversation that was documented between Aristotle and Alexander the Great. Aristotle was the mentor for Alexander the Great. And Alexander the Great posed a question to Aristotle, asking him, why is it that people always want to gravitate towards a collective governing system instead of having, because in those days they kind of viewed a limited governing system as to be best. Now, it was Plato at the same time that viewed the concept of statism. And I think in contrast to that, Alexander wanted to know, why is it that, you know, that's even an appealing concept? Now, I'm editorializing a bit here, but when you read this, he actually mentions how Alexander the Great wanted to, you know, why is it? Because they were looking at the hundreds of years of history that they were aware of, right? They had their own records of their recent history, and he posed the question, why is it that these societies kind of create these communal collective governments that destroy them? And Aristotle's answer was basically this, that it is innate with all people to try to share these what we call common ideas, that if we all pool together, we all come together, we can do this. And what ultimately ends up happening is they get taken over because they put all of the power and all of the eggs into the hands of a few or one. And what ends up happening when you have a collective board like global communism, if you are quickly marching down the path to destruction. So this is not new, folks. This, your desire and everybody else's desire to create a biblical theocracy for America is not what the framers created, not what our the divine hand of providence, our creator, our heavenly father. He didn't create this constitution to do that because he knew we would instantly divide ourselves and start fighting holy wars. And today we are fighting holy wars, but at least we're not using the power of government to do it. As soon as you put that power into the government's hands, and actually, conversely, we do have a religious institution, or I should say, we do have a theocracy. It's godlessness and secularism. The best thing we can do is remove godlessness and its secularism and its intolerance towards good enlightenment and good religion to actually be promoted. That is what elevates our society. That's why America was so great. It wasn't because we were all one, you know, reading one Bible and one faith. It was all because we were all, I'll just say, competing and moving down what we thought was the right path of salvation. Yeah, we all kind of used the Bible, but they weren't the same. And this always becomes the danger because, you know, from one person to the next, how they want to interpret and how the doctrines they want to cherry pick, that's always what happens. So why would you want to throw us into those arms of tyranny? I do not understand this is the other point that I need to make here. I do not understand why people do not recognize these types of attacks other than the fact that it involves their passion. So they get sucked into it. Oh, yes, America needs to become a theocracy again. These passions are just like the godless left who have successfully taken over our government. The attack is a multi-pronged attack, and it is designed to divide us in all of these different ways. And it is having a tremendous effect on those conservatives, and it's succeeding. We are unable to actually mount a good offensive because whose weapon do we use? And I'm here to tell you, not your Bible, it is the Constitution. Both, I believe, are God's books, are God's work. And I believe that in this government, you don't use something that is contrary, you know, like a mercantile, you know, economic system to actually fix a free market system. That's how you destroy it. The only way we can fix the Constitution is by using the Constitution. So when I look at the conservatives, what we called, and I say called past tense, the moral majority, we have to put aside these deep, you know, these desires that have nothing to do with the supreme law of our land, have nothing to do with the Constitution. They're great. I'm so glad that you worship God in the way you do. I'm not here to judge you at all on how you deem salvation or anything like that. We all need to get to that point where we stop judging each other and unite by putting aside our differences and uniting on the Constitution. We have this obligation. I said this before. As citizens of the United States, we are obligated to support and defend that Constitution. As a matter of fact, that obligation goes so deep that government has the power to compel you to take up arms and kill any enemy, foreign or domestic, that is trying to pervert or subvert that Constitution. That's why Section 3 of the 14th Amendment is the critical part. It basically exercises, it removes any public servant who is failing to support the Constitution. Why is it that the parties are the problem on this? And they understand this. And if you don't understand this as a part of the party, of being a party player, then you're a part of the problem. I mean, I don't think anybody listening to this show would even actually say, oh, no, the party over the Constitution. I believe everybody that listens to this show believes that we need to put the Constitution first. It's time we put the Constitution over parties and over all of these other theocratic, whatever the agenda is, it doesn't matter. It's time to focus on holding everybody accountable to the supreme law of the land. God knew where we would be today, and he gave us everything in that Constitution to fix this problem. So when we come back, I'm going to dive into, well, actually, I'll have a few more lead-ins, but we're going to get into these amendments, and we're going to start off with the 14th Amendment, like I promised last week. So, and I have all of these documents I'm going to give you some highlights out of, and we will be right back. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so when we start looking at we the people as the moral majority, we're no longer a moral majority. And as a matter of fact, staunch believers, this is my, based on what I've seen, the trends and Pew reports and so forth, staunch believers in Christ in America is a significant minority. My guess is it is easily less than 40% of U.S. citizens. Churches are struggling because they're not getting the attendance. Why, you know, why we can't turn to the church to save us while the government has its heels on its throat? We need the churches to assume the roles and responsibilities of compassionate services, education, healthcare, welfare, and those things. And the only way we're going to be able to do that is to rip these out of the hands of the Leviathan monster that has assumed these unconstitutional roles, responsibilities, and powers, period. Don't you get that? So before we actually can start, you know, sometimes it's just stating the obvious. Before you really work on this wounded body, let's take the object that's impaling this body out first. And that object is the Leviathan. The body can be saved. This Constitution and this nation can be saved. I'm here to tell you that when we look at the rule of law and we look at the heartland of America, I believe that you find the majority of that 40% in the heartland. And I'm looking at how the stand can actually start moving forward, because it's not just the heartland. When you look at almost every state, the majority of the counties are good people because they're red. And that means that that's a good percentage of you. When you look at the overwhelming majority sitting in these blue population centers, that's your Mordor. And the darkest of blue, it's so dark it looks black, is D.C. And there happens to be good people in that area, I know. So they're going to keep attacking us until we actually start uniting on the Constitution. And I cannot emphasize this enough. And so, as I said, I've got a couple of examples. So the first thing I need to let you know is the irony is overwhelming to me. I see how we're being divided on these very specific issues. And again, we're going to get into the 14th, but isn't it ironic that the 14th Amendment, the one thing that we absolutely, there's no language anywhere in the Constitution other than this concept of the paradigm of honor and integrity, that you have to keep your oath of office. There is no teeth in the Constitution that says if you can't keep your oath in supporting the Constitution, you are to be removed immediately and banned. I want to be clear here. Section 3 is not an impeachment. I get feedback on this all the time, and it was just recent. I think it was yesterday I got feedback on this. And the fact of the matter is this, folks. Impeachment is a trial. First, the first process of it is an indictment, and then the second process is it going through a trial. I'm sorry. You violate your oath. You don't get due process. You're not going to be thrown into jail. You're not going to be fined. You are removed, and all your emoluments that government has given you in serving the people is removed as well, and you go upon your life. You're not losing life, liberty, or property. You have been cast out, and you have been cast out for the remainder of your life to never serve as a public servant again. I can't make that any more simple. This is not an impeachment. This is why the pledge that we have, go look and read the pledge for your state. I got it out there. It clearly identifies that anybody that wants to get your vote, they need to take the hard position on the Constitution that they will support it. And if they're accused of not supporting it, then they will immediately step down in suspending their functioning as a public servant. They'll suspend themselves willingly. And then they will begin to refute those assertions. If those assertions aren't coming from a First Amendment petition, and that First Amendment petition clearly cites how the Constitution was being violated, and so, in other words, this public servant has to redress that. And if they don't redress that, then they have to, if they still want to fight, they'll have to go into a common law court amongst a common law jury of their vicinage. In other words, they go back to their state, if it's Congress or in the legislature, they go back to their county, their state and county, and they're to be tried in a trial of common law, where the facts will be actually put in front of the jury to determine whether you have violated that oath or not. It's not going to the Supreme Court. This is for the people that actually put you in office. You're a representative, and it's not for the Supreme Court to determine whether you were representing them or not. It should be a common law court out of the vicinage. So if you're a senator, it would be a common law court of the entire state, like a common law grand jury that's assembled from all of the counties of the state. It should be very simple of how to do these things, because I'm here to tell you, you're not going to get away with it when you actually lay out this process. And if we're a common law nation, then and the law that we built our common law upon, not the Bible, upon the Constitution, then it's not about this morality. It's not about theocracy. It is about the letter of the law. And so you better mind your P's and Q's if you're going to serve us. So anyway, one of the first issues, like I said, we're talking about is the 14th Amendment. And one of the things that they did is they started redefining it out the gate. I mean, I've proven to you this in Why Counties Matter Most. They literally started redefining it by the separation but equal and all these types of things. They also created unconstitutional facades called the Organic Act, or that was the big one. And then the other two facades were the 16th and 17th Amendment. Now, there's people out there that say, we got to undo the 16th Amendment. We can reclaim the Republic without undoing it. And we'll get into that. We can reclaim the Republic without really undoing the 17th Amendment. But both of those amendments are a part of our strategy in attacking. So let me give you two examples of what I will say the key perverters. And what's really funny is they use the exact same language. And so you need to be familiar with this congressional attempt. The Democrats in Congress. Now, let me paint the stage here for you. This is a 1967 cutout, and there are very specific pages of the House of Representatives. This is June 13th, 1967, okay? And if you go and look at the party control of the federal government in 1967, the party that controlled both the House of Representatives and the Senate, as well as the presidency, was the Democrats. And so I believe they saw that, you know, they really needed to do something about that Equal Rights Act. And so what they wanted to do, because the Equal Rights Act was kind of building off the original intent of the 14th Amendment, these privileges and immunities and so forth. So they had to attack the 14th Amendment to make sure that the Equal Rights Act couldn't really stick. Now, I'm here to tell you, no act, Congress cannot pass an act that's legitimate. But when we look at the Civil Rights Act, it didn't have the power to do some of the things it did, but it did have the power to do other things it did. The bottom line is the states need to be held accountable, because at that point in time of the 1963-64, when the Civil Rights Act was passed, the states were again, once again, out of the hundreds of years of history, the states again were the bad actors. Now, the 14th, this is out of this congressional report. This is what they're asserting. And these are all Democrats that are up there testifying, lying through their teeth. They say the 14th Amendment is unconstitutional. The purported 14th Amendment to the United States Constitution is and should be held to be ineffective, invalid, null, void, and unconstitutional for the following reasons. The joint resolution proposing the said amendment was not submitted to or adopted by a constitutional Congress. Now, what does that mean? The two-thirds of both houses actually passed it. Oh, because these guys, and one of the things you'll read when you read through this, is that they claim that they didn't leave the Union. Now, we're going to cover this. They did leave the Union. But they're basically trying to use Lincoln and his tyrannical acts and assumptions to basically validate the fact that they never really left the Union. Even though all of these states adjoined to the Confederation and had representation in the Confederation. Do you understand what I just said? They actually formed a new government. Oh, but they didn't leave the Union. In other words, they're trying to butter their bread on all six sides. So the joint resolution proposing said amendment was not submitted to or adopted by a constitutional Congress, Article 1, Section 3, and Article 5 of the Constitution. The joint resolution was not submitted to the President for his approval, Article 1, Section 7. Now, the President does not approve of the amendments. Bills and laws are submitted to the President. No amendment ever needs to go past the President's desk for signature. He's not involved. Go read Article 5. It takes two-thirds of both houses, and then Congress submits the amendment to the states, the parties who have the authority. The President has no ability to have any influence on an amendment to the Constitution. He only has the authority to take bills and laws that are in pursuant to the Constitution to sign them into effect. All laws that are not in pursuant to the Constitution, he is obligated to actually veto. And that's one of the problems. I'll expose a lot of the little problems that are with the Constitution, but for the most part, it's perfect. But the one little problem is we should have a president should have the power to remove Congress's ability to actually pass a law that violates the Constitution. They cannot do it. They have to actually pass an amendment. If the President says this must be an amendment, and he's right on it because it's not something that's within the enumerated powers, then he should actually be able to, go after all of those people in Congress that voted for it. We have to have the ability to quickly flush the turds in government. Sorry for saying that, folks, are putting it that way. But that's the reality. These guys are, I hate to say it, they're the bottom feeders, or they're the lowest of low of our society. Those who want to attack the Constitution. The third point that they make here, again, the proposed 14th Amendment was rejected by more than one-fourth of all the states then in the Union, and it was never ratified by three-fourths of all the states in the Union per Article 5. Now, we're going to go through all of that, and I'm going to actually go through those numbers with you. And these numbers are available to you, but what's important, what is imperative, that you understand is that that document right there has set the stage for these, I'll call them dark stars, to rise, you know, because they really believe what was said. Now, I'm not sure if you've ever heard of L.C. Lyons, and he has a website where you can kind of go through this little diatribe he calls, all right, this is the title of his page, The Day Our Country Was Stolen, How the 14th Amendment Enslaved Us All Without a Shot Fired. This guy has so much misinformation in here, I don't have time. It would take me a few shows just to pick at this. And, you know, what's really important is, one, he actually buys into this idea that all of this, that the South didn't secede, that they couldn't have seceded. He buys into Lincoln's paradigm that you can't leave the Union. And that would be contradicting to that's even contradicting to the gospel of Christ. To the true gospel, any person can actually remove themselves from him and actually adjoin themselves to Satan and give their lives to him. We have that liberty, especially in his Constitution, when the states feel like the Constitution, and they can prove that the Constitution is violating their essence and rights. We go through this with the Virginia and Kentucky resolutions, and how Madison and Jefferson proved that when a state actually says, that's it, we can't deal with this law is destroying us, you are violating the Constitution, ergo we nullify, and at that same process, in the same breath, they secede from the Union, because that is breaking the compact so egregiously that we cannot continue in the Union. The ability to divorce oneself from, I'll just say, oppressions, repressions, what violations coming from the Constitution, a state absolutely and technically, according to in Jefferson's 1799 resolution, the Kentucky resolutions of 1799, he said it's a state's duty not only to nullify, but to leave the Union. Actually, it doesn't say leave the Union, but to nullify. Madison clarifies that nullification implies the state must leave the Union. You can't be a part of a union and say, I'm going to abide by, you know, all the inflictions that come from this federal government, and say, except for that one. You can't stay in that marriage. You have to leave. And so that's the whole point and the importance of interposition. We go through this so many times that if I had a camera on, you'd just see how blue my face is right now, because I do go through this a lot. Interposition is the only way. We actually covered this in the seven paths, those basic seven paths. But L.C. Lyon, let me get to this. L.C. Lyon exposes one of his biggest flaws, and it's in the fourth paragraph, and he says, only those who are subject to a government can be made to do things. Free inhabitants are subject to no one but God. Now, hold on here. A free inhabitant is a different, absolutely a legally different person that occupies space in the United States. They're a free inhabitant. And those people who were leading this charge are trying to convince you to surrender your citizenship and become a free inhabitant. You do that, you have no more rights protected by this government. The right of due process is only guaranteed to U.S. citizens. Even though an evil Supreme Court has applied all due process and all these laws to illegal aliens and everybody abroad, practically. I mean, that's how far they've perverted this concept. Only citizens have the rights and privileges and immunities guaranteed by that Constitution. And so you may be an inhabitant living in a state, but if a governor said, hey, all inhabitants, you know, don't have a right to practice their religion anymore. Only U.S. citizens have that right. Would that be unconstitutional? Nope. And that's because they can't make any law to enforce that would abridge the privileges and immunities of, and what does the 14th Amendment say? Specifically, GR is going to go to the 14th Amendment. What does that privilege and immunities part actually say? And so when it says, no state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States. So a state could actually pass a law to oppress those people who aren't citizens. You don't have a right. That's the language of the law. There's no doubt in my mind, God knew we were going to be overran by all sorts of people who were actually, they were going to be used as weapons to destroy us. So, as we kind of move forward in the 14th Amendment, this Mr. Lyons actually cites the fact that the 14th Amendment wasn't properly amended. And he actually builds off of this whole argument that the Democrats have made. Okay, so I promised you that we would walk through this. Now, first off, the first thing we actually have to do is we actually have to basically lay out this concept of statehood. Did the states leave the Union? You can't talk about the 14th Amendment without really going through the Civil Law or the Civil War. And so when we look at the Civil War, the states actually seceded. They did create their own government and they left the Congress. Are we to ignore the fact that they did that? No. And there are consequences with that, right? When you actually go to another faith and you've taken upon yourself a new form, a new government form, then you've exercised your ability to actually remove yourself and be no longer a citizen of the United States. So how is it that you become a citizen? You have to apply. And the Constitution, the beauty of the Constitution, it literally lays the responsibility upon who? The president? Nope. We go through this all the time. Article 4, Section 3. Congress shall have the power to admit new states into the Union. So when Congress told all of the Confederate states that, sorry, you can't come back into this Union, you left, and now you're going to deal with the consequences. And one of the consequences is that we just passed an amendment. In 1866, so one of the things that, you know, L. Lyons or L.C. Lyons puts out is he talks about, and he refers to the 14th Amendment as the Civil Rights Act. In other words, he's confusing the Civil Rights Act from the 14th Amendment. So the 14th Amendment actually came after Congress realized that the Civil Rights Act of 1866 could not carry weight. So what they did was they quickly converted or changed their focus to creating an amendment. And they did this in literally 2 months. I have all 263 pages of the debates in Congress, and a few of them are added that you'll notice it's really more the Freedmen's Bureau where they're discussing what the Freedmen's Bureau is and so forth. But when you look at the 14th Amendment, I challenge you to go look at the original assertion of what the language of the 14th Amendment would be. They laid it out. And then they started chewing it, and go look at Section 3 and how it changed from just punishing politicians from the South to actually lay out a procedure forward that any politician who takes an oath of office. So when and I'm not going to repeat it. Go read it, and you'll notice that it doesn't mean that it is being applied to only hurt those people who committed the rebellion against the Union. It means that anybody that rebels against the Constitution moving forward will be punished by being removed from public service and banned for life. And they don't have the right of due process. I would like to take it a step further. I think that those people should be stripped of their citizenship and become inhabitants and basically live under the whims and the desires of those good citizens who will actually continue to support liberty. I think that's the best way forward. So that little tweak on the 14th Amendment would be they should be stripped because they shouldn't be able to vote even. Their perverse concepts of violating the Constitution as a citizen and a public servant goes beyond the pale. They should be stripped. And I think any citizen that goes as far as to going out and committing riots and so forth, they should be stripped. We are a civil society, and it was very, very forward for all of us to understand that this whole concept of this civil society was the First Amendment right of petitioning government for the redress of grievances. You don't have a right to be a spoiled little brat to go out and stop cars in the street. You do that crap, you're denying people their constitutional right of commerce. The whole point of roadways is to actually conduct commerce, to move from one point to the other. And so when you're out denying people their civil rights, I challenge the reason why you're able to even participate in our system. Obey the laws. We are a nation of rules of laws, and the rule of law is our king. We have to hold people accountable, even ourselves. This is why the militia is so important. But anyway, we're going to go through the states. I got just a couple minutes, and actually I may not actually get through all of this, so we may start off with the Civil War and the 14th Amendment's ratification. Now, the Confederacy was Georgia, South Carolina, Virginia, North Carolina, Tennessee, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, Arkansas, Florida, and Texas. Those 11 states. Now, though that was the Confederacy. Now, when you look at the Union, there was a total of 25 states. 25. So what is the magical number for 3/4 of 25? 19. So we needed to get 19 states to ratify the 14th Amendment. Now, when I say 19 states, I mean 19 states out of the 25. Now, if another state joins the Union by adding one, then it shifts that. And guess what ended up happening? Because when they passed the 14th Amendment, they sent it out to the live states in the Union. In other words, those states that were partakers. And they sent it out to the Confederacy and said, if you want to join the Union, you must ratify this amendment or wait, and you won't be able to join until the 14th Amendment is ratified. In other words, they said, if this thing doesn't pass, then you can't join the Union. Now, why were the southern states so motivated in joining, like Tennessee? And why were some of these other states really squirming and screaming to say, hey, you can't do this? Now, what did Article 4 say? Congress shall admit new states. So it's up to Congress. And they can make all the rules and regulations, and they made the rule and regulation that you can't come in unless you ratify this Constitution and this 14th Amendment that you caused us to write. You're the ones that are doing all of these evil things. I could get into this, and I'm going to really quick. I don't have time to give you all of the details, but I will just say this, that the one thing that sealed the deal for the 14th Amendment that proved America needed to ratify that was the massacre that occurred in the white empowered law enforcement and politicians and so forth that basically sanctioned the massacre of black freemen in a convention. This was almost 200 men. This was almost 200 men in 1866 as these men were trying to organize themselves to get involved in government, and they were massacred. Why is it that we don't hear the black left talking about these things? I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic. We need your help, and I'll be diving back into this next Feedback Friday. God bless. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.